You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Kate, Monique, welcome to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast.
Welcome to part two of our ETF investing mini-series.
Yes, what are we talking about?
Well, all of this week we're talking about ETF investing and making sure you've got the confidence and skills to research and invest in ETFs and sort out your financial future.
Well, yes. This is 102, Monique.
Yep.
We just graduated. Now we're going to talk about some more interesting things, like we're going to go in a few different directions. I'll scratch the surface just a little bit on some other ideas.
Nice. Can't wait.
So if you're new here and you do not know what we're talking about, I would recommend heading back to part one and listening to that first, where we explain what ETFs are. We use some chocolates, so it's lots of fun. We just ate a few. So now we're getting ready to walk you through what we look at when we're trying to figure out what ETF we want to invest in.
Yep. And then this will help us kind of segue into future episodes where we talk about other things and we use more examples. Okay, so if you haven't already listened to episode one, as Kate said, please go back and listen to that. And we may bring up a box of favorites. That was our example of an ETF. So, Kate, what are the types of things we're going to be talking about?
Yeah. So in today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about risk profile and working out what type of investor we are, because that's really important when we figure out what ETFs we actually want in our portfolio and how much we should actually be putting in each one. And if we are a high-risk investor, what that might look like versus if we're maybe a low-risk investor and we don't really want to take much risk with our money. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about ethical investing and how that works with ETFs. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the core and satellite approach that Owen briefly mentioned at the end of part one. We're going to talk about actually working out where on earth do you want to invest? Do you want to invest in property or Australian shares? Do you want to invest in the US tech companies? Like figuring all of this out. When you might want to use ETFs versus another approach. Really working out what you're looking for and how do you actually learn more and some resources there. And where does this ETF actually fit into your strategy? And finally, does it matter how big the ETF is?
Mm-hmm. There's a fair bit to cover, so let's crack on. Risk profile. Do you know what a risk profile is?
No, please tell me.
Well, I might firstly ask, do you know what risk profile your super's invested in?
No idea.
Okay.
Yeah. So risk profile is a bit of a tongue twister because the way we define risk in finance can get a bit complicated pretty quick.
Right.
But some ways, so say if something is low risk, what we mean by that is we think that as, you know, finance people, we actually think that it's not going to bounce around a lot.
Okay.
It's just going to bounce around less.
Right. Right?
And that's called what we call volatility.
Yeah.
You know, an investment that's low risk might only fall on average one in every 10 years. Okay. So it might go backwards.
How do you know something is low risk though?
We'll get to that in just a minute. Whereas something that might be high risk might go backwards one in every 3 years.
Right.
But the idea is that the more risk you take up until a certain point, eventually it should pay off. Even though it's a bit bumpier along the way, mm-hmm. taking more risk tends to result in better wealth.
Right.
So a good example would be shares are riskier than cash in the bank.
Yep.
Right, because cash in the bank pays you interest. You know how much interest you get, the bank tells you.
Yep.
The chance of the bank, you know, losing your money is almost like next to zero.
Yep.
But if you invest in shares, they're probably going to go up or down 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% in a day, and that's normal.
Yeah, right.
Right, but over the long term, if you just look at the Forbes Rich List, none of those people keep their money in a bank account.
Yeah, okay.
They all took risk.
Yeah.
Right, so wealth is basically a product of taking extra risk.
Okay.
So the more risk, calculated risk you take, not just like go and buy something crazy. That's how we kind of think about risk as a general thing. But Kate, you know, we've got examples of like low risk things there. How do we determine what would be low risk? Maybe what's an example? Low risk portfolio versus a higher risk portfolio.
Yeah. So risk is very personal. And if you do have a look at your super fund, you'll realize that a balanced portfolio with your super fund looks very different to another super fund. So in this way that it's kind of hard to work out, and it kind of, you have to start with working out what your tolerance to risk is, because you might absolutely love bungee jumping and you're fine to take the risk because it's worth the reward to you. But I could think of nothing worse to do.
You'd have never bungee jumped?
I have never bungee jumped, but okay. I was talking about it with someone yesterday and it sounded like a terrifying activity.
Okay.
Yes. So whether you're willing to take your willingness and capacity to take risk with your money.
Yeah.
And so if you're thinking, okay, I'm really scared about investing, it's really new to me, I don't know what I'm doing, I do not really want to see my money fall in value, then you might think of yourself at the beginning, and your risk profile can change, as a low risk investor. So that might be also called conservative. So you might say, I want 80% of my money in cash because I do not know what I'm doing. I'm very scared of this thing called investing, and I'm just going to put a tiny bit of my money, my overall portfolio, into shares or into bonds and things like that. And so this is taking a very low risk approach because most of your money is safe in a term deposit, in your savings account, maybe it's under your bed as well, and you're just putting maybe 10% of your portfolio in shares. And I would say that's quite a low risk portfolio because overall, if you look at the cash as part of your portfolio, as well as the shares, that's seen as quite a low risk, a conservative approach. And so your portfolio would be a lot smoother overall. If you look at it like $100,000 and $10,000 is in an ASX 200 ETF, $90,000 is in cash, then the drop, if the ASX 200 ETF falls, in the context of that overall portfolio, including the cash, is a lot less severe.
So the opposite would probably be true, which is that if you had 80% or 90% of your money in shares and shares ETFs, you would be a higher risk investor. So that would be what we call a high risk investor. And Kate mentioned your capacity and willingness to take risk. We, by the way, just in case you're going to ask this question, is if you have cash for like your lifestyle, so like if you have rent or a mortgage or something, that is not what we count as cash in a portfolio.
Okay.
So there are like two different types of cash.
Yeah.
There's like one that funds your life,
mm-hmm.
and then there's one that sits in your investment account.
Okay.
Right? So when we say cash, that's what we're referring to, the cash that's in your brokerage account, not the cash that's for a rainy day.
Yeah.
That's what we call an emergency fund. That's separate. Yeah. Okay. So that's the first, I guess, point of clarity there. And, you know, like Kate said, willingness and capacity, you don't want to invest until you've got that emergency fund. Why? Because if you go and invest in shares, let's say you bought the IOZ ETF,
mm-hmm.
and you put all of your money in that, right? And then you're like, holy heck, my mortgage repayment needs to come out tomorrow. And oh no, my IOZ ETF just fell 4% because it was like a bad day or whatever. Then you're like, I now need to sell my IOZ ETF, but it's worth 5% or 4% less to pay for something that I should have seen coming.
Right.
Right. So the emergency fund is designed so that you don't have to sell your investments.
Yeah.
And so just keep that in mind as we talk about this stuff, is we're separating those two things.
Yeah, totally. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And that comes to the portfolio allocation, because you can structure your portfolio in a way that works for you. And often you don't quite work out your tolerance to risk until things actually happen, until mm-hmm. It's very easy to think, I'm happy to go all in, I'm 100% high growth investor, I can deal with anything. And then when you see your portfolio fall in value, which it will, because that's a natural part of the market, because businesses aren't going to do great all the time, there's lots of factors happening in the economy. So if you see your $100 portfolio fall to $80 or $70, and it might be like that for a while, that's very scary. And so it's really hard to properly understand your tolerance to risk until it actually happens. And that's why we really like building a diversified portfolio where we have some Australian shares, US shares, we've got some property, we've got some cash, maybe we have some bonds, and we structure it in a way that we get a good mix that makes us feel comfortable that we can ride out the ups and downs. We're still going to see it fall, but it potentially won't fall as much as it would if it was just in 100% US tech stocks.
Just some general thoughts from Kate and I. I would just say that if you look at your super fund, it's normally a pretty good like guesstimate of what you should be kind of focusing on if you do have your own share portfolio. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a super fund, what they call balanced.
Yep.
Normally what they say when they say balanced is they normally mean it's like 50-50.
Okay.
Right. So it's like 50% in what we would call riskier investments, so like shares.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'd be, and property would be in that too.
Okay.
And then there'd be 50% in less risky stuff.
Right.
So that would be like cash. We mentioned an ETF before that just does, like it just invests in term deposits
yep.
for you basically.
Cool.
Bonds, those things would be on the less risky side.
Okay.
Now, even though, you know, we do have a tolerance to risk. So you might go and bungee jump. I might not do that. So maybe your risk, even though we're similar age,
mm-hmm.
you might go and do that and I might not, which means I'm probably more conservative.
Right.
Now, the thing is, another thing that we need to think about is our timeline. In the first episode, we talked about how long someone should be invested in it. You asked me how long like would you want to invest? I said 5 years minimum.
Yeah.
Now, if you're, say, 64 years old and you plan to retire at 65, I would be saying, well, you shouldn't have all of your, in fact, you should probably have less of your money in the shares because the shares could go up and down in the next year and we don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
But because you're relatively young, you probably don't need the money for a long time. You should kind of default to being more aggressive, like higher risk.
Right.
Now, this is up for debate, but for most younger people that don't need their money for 10 or 20 years, it should be like closer to almost all growth.
Okay.
Right. But the problem that you have when you do that is you can expect it to bounce around all the time. And like I said in the first episode, 4 out of 5 years it might go up on average, right? But one of those 5 years is going to be pretty scary.
Yep.
And you're like, what the hell is this investment thing? But for the most part, if you just look back over 100 years of history, for the most part, on average, the stock market tends to go up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that's why we do it.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What and do you I think that there are some ways you can reduce your risk as investors. Like what I said, diversifying, not putting all of your eggs in one basket. You want to be invested in different things. You also don't want to invest everything at once. So if you're a new investor listening right now and you've got $10,000 burning a hole in your pocket and you just want to do something with it, it would not be our advice to invest all of that money in one thing at once. Especially as a new investor, you want to put your toe into the water before you dive in. You want to make sure it's deep enough. So you want to maybe invest, start with $500 and invest on a regular basis. So you might invest small chunks every month. And that's a way to reduce your risk as well.
Yeah, because you might be, if you've got 10 grand, you're like, you rock up to the stock market and you're like, I'm going to chuck it all in today. And then tomorrow it falls. You're going to feel terrible.
Yeah.
Right? But if you just chuck $500 in today and it falls tomorrow, you're like, huh. Oh, I'll just put another $500 in at lower prices.
Yep.
And then if it goes up the next day, you'll be like, huh, I'll just put another $500 in.
Right.
And so you kind of like, it's regret minimization. It's also, you know, as a beginner, you're not going to go in and just go straight into the deep end and be like, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, totally.
we would advise breaking it up. And that we get this question, not just from people that are in their 20s, Monique, we get this question from people that are in their 60s.
Yeah, okay.
And they might have just sold their property or they may have just cashed in their super or something like this. And they're like, should I just invest it all at once? And we're like, no,
no.
Same rules apply. Yeah. It doesn't matter how much you have. Like, start slow. Yeah.
So it's like you said before, if you're older, obviously you don't have that much more time compared to those people in their 20s. Like, what should they do?
Well, the thing is, like, even at 65, you're still going to live for like 20, 30 years.
Right? Yeah.
So even for people at that age, we would still say you do want some shares. You don't just want to take no risk because if you do, then your money's just going to – you're not going to make as much growth from your money. So you want to make sure that over time you still have a good mix.
Okay.
There used to be this is not what we advocate for, but there used to be this old rule of thumb, right? And it used to be 100 minus your age is the amount that you should invest in the stock market.
Okay.
So let's say you're 25. Yeah, 100 minus 25 is 75% in the stock market. So that'd be like through share ETFs.
Yeah.
That's what we mean by stock market.
Yeah.
And then the other 25% you might have in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might have it in a bond ETF or something like that. So the lower risk stuff. But that's a rule of thumb. I don't probably advocate for that too much anymore because even at 30 years of age, most of us have a very long time before we need the money.
Yeah.
So you can be more aggressive for most people. But if you want to retire at 33, you probably don't want to have it all in the stock market. Maybe you do, maybe don't, but probably not.
Another way to reduce your risk, Monique, is by education and actually understanding what's... So listening to this podcast, doing our ETF course, actually knowing what you're doing when you're investing is a much... It's a really good way to make sure that when your money falls in value because you've invested in shares, you don't freak out and sell at the bottom of the market, which is unfortunately what a lot of investors do. They second guess themselves. They wonder why they even got involved with investing in the first place. And they sell when their $100 has fallen to $70 and they lock in that loss. And often they will be too scared to ever get back into investing because this experience has put them off. So not only do they lock in a loss and they lose money because they have sold when the market has fallen instead of investing for a long 5-10 plus year time frame, they also don't invest again. So they miss out on any future gains as well. And that's really sad when we see that and we hear stories about that because it means people have lost a lot of opportunity to build their money and build their financial future. But I think education is really important in if you are wanting to be a higher growth investor, really understanding what you're doing does help there.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't know anything about investing, like even from episode one, do not call yourself a high growth investor just yet.
Yeah. There's so other than listening to this podcast, where else could you learn all this stuff?
Yeah. So the podcast would be good. Just go back and listen to the back catalog.
Yep.
But you could take our free courses. That would be a great place to start. You could read books. There's heaps of wonderful books out there. Like The Barefoot Investor is a good start.
Yep.
There's other books like it's a bit different, but Rich Dad Poor Dad. If you want to get into how the stock market works, there's one up on Wall Street. There's a heap
get
of books.
Get Started Invested by our friends at Equity Mates.
Yeah, Get Started Investing. There's heaps. So those types of books. In fact, there's probably more beginner investing books. It's probably like 10 to 1.
Okay.
Like everyone's written a beginner investing.
So basically read a lot.
Read a lot. Yeah, well, the best investors happen to have two traits in common. They are really good at reading and they're really good at writing.
Nice.
It just happens to be the case. Okay. And I don't think that's a coincidence. It's just they kind of want to learn. The final thing is so when we talk about high risk, we can also call that high growth, because basically when we take risk, what we're doing is we're going for growth. And when we talk about low risk, we can call it conservative, but balance is somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. And there's the final thing, which is just ESG, and that stands for environment, social, governance, and another word for it is an ethical investing.
Okay.
Yeah. Kate. Do you want to elaborate on that or?
Yeah, what is that?
That's when your values come a little bit more into play. And we mentioned before in the last episode about that box of favorites where you just get everything. It's transparent. You know what the top 200 companies that are in that box are, but you can't customize it. You pick that box and that's what you get. But with ethical investing, there's now ETFs available which might invest in the top 200 companies, but they'll strip out certain things like mining or gambling or things that we might know as sin stocks, potentially that don't align with your values. So there's a lot of different options when you're researching ETFs, and it's something to think about. That's why we're just throwing it in here. It's something to sit at the back of your mind. If that's something you're interested in, there are ETFs that allow you to invest in large Australian companies, large US companies, but put a bit of a filter on. Of course, it's their filter. It's their rules.
Yep.
You still can't customize it, but it is potentially a little bit more in line with what you want to invest in.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's just, as Kate said, with the favorites box, you'd be like only investing in Turkish delights that are like sugar-free.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Something like that. And it's very popular and it's grown in popularity. There's a lot of debate about it. It's really contentious, but it's definitely something that we see emerging as a popular thing. Like people want to be more hands-on.
Yeah.
And they don't want to invest in casinos and they don't want to invest in all of those, you know, vices, which we call, you know, like even some like really contentious defense contractors, for example.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. So we mentioned it briefly in the first session, which was this core versus satellite.
Yeah.
So do you remember the analogy?
Oh my gosh, you're putting me on the spot.
Remember, I did this one with my fist and the thing going around the outside.
So it's like the main thing in the middle, and then you can do like the thematic ones on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this would be like, so in the middle, this is where we talk about our diversified portfolio. If we go back to like risk profiles, you want to focus on this first. So you want to be like, I want to get my core right. It'd be like going to the personal trainer. They say, you got to work on your abs and you got to get your, you know, your balance right. And then you go and look at the things around the outside. You take the risk and you try and do other things. And so a core versus satellite approach is we want to get that core right. Then we'll talk about the things around the outside. Whereas most people tend to go the other way, particularly males. Sorry, guys. We tend to start with the really super like out there kind of ideas like, hey, what do you think of Tesla? Or hey, like this
lithium
or this mining thing that's unproven in Africa. Like, let's go and invest in this. We're going to be millionaires.
Yeah.
That doesn't really work. Yeah. You want to start with the center and then go and do that stuff.
Yeah.
So this is where we talk about the core versus the satellite.
Yeah.
Mm. And the core's a lot less exciting. It's just going to be those staple things in the middle of your portfolio that you're going to be investing in on a monthly or every second month basis for a long period of time. And it's just become, you can even automate it, and it's just going to be that staple core part of your portfolio. And your super fund does something very similar. They have a very simple core portfolio often.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of debate about what should go in that core portfolio. And again, the risk profile comes into play. But in the core portfolio, you might want maybe a certain portion of your portfolio in Australian companies. So you might use an ASX 200 ETF. Yeah. And we've mentioned a few, but that might be part of that core of your portfolio.
So would you choose like the safer options for that core?
Yeah. So you're wanting, there's always going to be risk when investing, and the market's going to fall, it's going to rise. It's a long-term thing. But ETFs is what you would probably put in your core, especially as a beginner, because you don't really know which individual companies are going to do well over a 10 or 20 year time frame, and that requires quite a bit more skill and research and time to dedicate to it. So we want to get people invested more early on in their journey, and so ETFs are a good way to get that core started early on.
Mm.
Because you just need to choose a few ETFs to put in that core instead of having to pick 20 or 30 different companies. And that's a lot of work.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's where we would focus. And you're right. Like, you can start in the middle when we say we want proven. So we talked about ETFs that have been around for a long time. So making sure that they've been around for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
We don't want their fees to be too high. We're just drawing a rule, like a line in the sand. It could, like, we say not more than 0.5%.
Yeah.
That's the average. Yep. So we say just stay below that.
Yeah, right.
We want to pick the boring ETFs that are easy to understand. We don't really want to put anything complicated in there.
Yep.
Because the idea, Monique, with this part of the portfolio is just imagine that you buy these ETFs and you still have them in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to pick the thing that's really hot right now and then in 3 years it's dead in the water.
Yeah, right.
So pick the really like boring, low cost, long term things that have been around for a long time. And then around the outside, that's like you said, you can take that risk.
Okay, cool.
And so that might be things like individual stocks, or it might be even people that have like crypto in their portfolio, even if they consider that an investment, they might put that in as a satellite position.
Okay. Yeah.
So you put, like, if we go back to our $10,000 example before,
mm-hmm.
you might split it up so that $9,000 is what you're going to invest in your core and then $1,000 in your satellite.
Okay.
Some people would say you don't even need the satellite, which is fair. But, you know, if you want to do that, that's by all means, go and give that a crack. The point is get your core right.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. And I find a lot of people do want to dabble or do want to try something new. And so we are definitely not saying don't do any of that, but we want you to, the 90% or 95%, the core, we want you to do simple, low cost things in it.
Yeah.
Kat, did you want to talk about ETFs and overlapping ETFs, like not having too many of one?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when people get started, they can end up finding so many different ETFs and it gets really exciting, and then they end up with 10 ETFs in their portfolio and suddenly it's become very complicated. And we would probably say, oh, what's the maximum you probably should have in your core? Maybe like 5 or 6.
Yeah, you probably don't need more than that, to be honest.
Yeah, so you're using, if you're buying an ETF to give you exposure to the top 200 Australian companies, you don't really need to have two ETFs that give you exposure to the top 200 Australian companies. Yeah. Like, one does the job because they invest in the same thing.
Yeah.
So you might want one ETF investing in top 200 Australian companies, one ETF in top 500 US companies, one ETF potentially like developing markets or real estate investment trust or whatever you have a particular view of in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure you have a quick look at the holdings when you have a look at the ETF provider's website to make sure you're not doubling up on particular holdings. Because if you invest in two Australian ETFs, suddenly you're just crossing over all of the holdings. You're getting BHP twice.
Yeah. Mm. And what happens if that does happen?
Well, no, the world's not going to end. It's going to be fine. But it just means that you might be making your portfolio a little bit more complex than it needs to be. You might not have the most simple approach that you could have. And you want to keep your costs down when it comes to brokerage fees, which we'll get to in part five of this series. But because you have to pay money to buy that ETF. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing it on a regular basis, you just want to reduce the costs there. So having only a few ETFs in your portfolio that represent the core that you want,
yep,
is a good way to do it, keeping things simple and reducing the cost to keep buying in.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So nothing bad happens. It's just potentially
increasing
complexity and you're just sort of getting overlaps you don't really need.
Yeah. It's just like you'd be buying like instead of the favorites box, it'd be like someone just puts a different sticker on it and you end up getting the same stuff anyway. Yeah,
and there's really no point in doing
that. Just pick the best one and go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the interesting thing in Australia with those core ETFs, because they're so popular and so many people want them in their portfolio, every ETF provider makes a top 200 Australian company ETF. And so they're all quite similar. And in the next few episodes, we'll get into how do you actually do that comparison process and make a decision. But when it comes to the thematic ETFs, maybe only one provider offers this particular robotic ETF in Australia. But when it comes to core, there's often a few choices. So you kind of just need to choose one.
Okay.
So like your example is the IOZ ETF. Yep. That's the ticker symbol for the one that you bought.
Yep.
If you own that, you wouldn't go and buy the VAS ETF, which is the Vanguard equivalent, basically. You wouldn't buy the A200 from BetaShares. Yep.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, they're all kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could have both in your portfolio because you might think, well, you know, this one's actually dropped its fees now, so I want to put more in that, but I don't want to sell my old one.
Yeah. Well, there's the main reason for choosing either one of those, like the fees.
Yeah, pretty much the fees. Yeah, there are very subtle differences that they try and market to you and say, oh, but this one does this tiny little thing, but it might only be like 2% different.
Yeah.
In which case, you'd just be better off going with the one that's cheaper anyway.
Okay.
So it's only if they're like really different.
Yeah.
Like there are some ETFs in Australia that do invest in Australian shares, but they do it in a different way. Mm-hmm. In the first episode, I said how the biggest companies normally make up the biggest part of the ETF. There are some ETFs that don't do it that way. They just say, nope, everyone gets the same size inside the ETF. So this is an example, if there was 10 inside the ETF, 10 different shares, all of them are 10%, right? As opposed to the biggest one making up most of the ETF. And that's just the way they try and differentiate themselves. But for the most part, you can just check what's inside the ETF and make sure you don't already have that kind of thing inside your portfolio. So I guess a question is like, when do I use an ETF over something else? For the most part, an ETF does basically a lot of the things. It's like a Swiss Army knife. If you think of ETFs as a whole, it kind of does a bit of everything. So you can get an ETF that invests in shares, bonds. Like we said, there's the cash ETF.
Gold. So you don't actually need to go and buy your own gold and find a safe.
And a lot of people over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, maybe that's a bit long, but over that period of time, a lot of people will probably end up just using ETFs.
Okay.
They probably won't invest in individual shares. And that's definitely the way that we see it going with our members, is we see our members voting with their wallets or their investment wallets and preferencing ETFs over just about anything.
Right.
Because if you think about it, an ETF, if we talk about it, it's like a basket of things, the only real limitation of what you can basket up is what the ETF provider can go and buy for you.
Okay.
So, you know, if there's unlimited amounts of chocolate, if there's unlimited amounts of fruit, those things would work. But if there's something that's not, you know, unlimited and easily found, that's where there's a limit. So a good example of this would be like residential property, right? So let's say I said that you could invest in different types of property through, but you could own Metricon.
Yep.
Remember how I said that? Yep. You could own shares of Metricon because it's a property company. But if you wanted to buy an actual house, it doesn't really work because with an ETF, you want to be able to buy and sell it every day.
Okay.
So you can't buy and sell a house every day.
No, that'd be pretty difficult.
Yeah, because you own a house. Yeah. So you would know that you've got to get a loan, you've got to get it settled, you've got to agree on a date.
It's a process.
Yeah, so you can't buy and sell that every day.
No.
So that's an example of something where an ETF wouldn't work. There are some other examples, like if there's really small companies, sometimes small companies don't have enough shares available for everyone to buy in.
Okay.
So this is not enough shares. Like I said, there's only 100 shares available for someone to buy.
Yeah.
In all of Australia, there's only 100 shares left.
Yeah.
You can't have an ETF that wants to put those shares inside of it because the ETF will just take them all and then there'll be nothing left.
Right.
So small companies typically don't work that well with ETFs.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But if you're investing in big companies, bank accounts, if you're investing in bonds, these types of things tend to be perfect for ETFs. And fortunately, those are the things that typically make up like most of people's wealth, except their property, which is the house that they live in.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
So, Kate, all that said, where does an ETF fit in?
Yes. So, if you're going on this journey of trying to work out what ETF you want, I think the first thing you need to start with what type of category you want. So you want something for your core portfolio. Yep. And the example we're going to run through in the rest of this series is you want to get a core ETF that invests in the top 200 Australian companies. And so firstly, you need to identify that. You need to identify what does your overall portfolio strategy going to look like. And that is something that you're not going to figure out just from listening to this podcast episode. It's going to require a bit more research, listening to some of our other investing podcasts, maybe taking our ETF investing course and just really broadening your research. So you're going to have to do a bit of background work here so you actually know what are the different things I can invest in? Because if you've never sort of thought about investing before, it takes a while to sort of open up your mind to the fact that, oh, Disney is a company. I can buy shares in Disney. I can also buy an ETF that owns shares in Disney. And so you kind of have to make that switch to go from being a consumer to being an investor. But once you've worked out, okay, this is what I want in my portfolio. I want to invest a certain percentage of my core portfolio in the top 200 Australian companies. I think an ETF is going to get me there. Then working out how that fits. And so doing some research. And we're going to, in the next episode, get into how do you actually then find different options and how do you compare them?
Mm. Yeah. And so, you know, there are many different ways you can invest in ETFs, which we'll get to as well. But for the most part, like, you know, you can use ETFs to build a large part of your wealth. So if you've got a property, you might want to pay down your mortgage. And then the other option might be, do I invest in ETFs?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a little bit older, say like you're 45 or 50 and you were thinking of retirement, you might change it slightly. You might reorder your preferences. You might go, pay down my mortgage and invest in super before ETFs.
Okay.
Because at that age, you're thinking, I can access my super in 10 or 15 years. And that's a lower tax environment. So that's where it starts to become a little bit different. But for most, what we call accumulators, young people, so, and by that I mean anyone, you know, below 50 in this instance, you can probably think of ETFs as kind of your number one tool in your strategy.
Cool.
So as long as you have your strategy, you know you want to build wealth, you've got a goal in mind, ETFs can probably get you most of the way there. And so, Kate, there's this question that people ask, and it's a fantastic question because it is the most obvious. Does the price of the thing, the ETF, you know, I see it on Google, I see it in my brokerage account. Does that price matter?
Yeah. So when we look at individual companies, the price does matter.
Yeah.
A lot more. But when we're looking at ETFs, the price of the ETF that you see in your brokerage account or on the news or in Google Finance, it doesn't really matter because you are more interested in what is in that basket and the value of everything in there.
Mm. So it just really matters how much you cut it up.
Yeah.
So like you could have, say, a $100 pizza and you cut it up 10 ways, it's $10 a slice.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could have the same pizza, but you could cut it up 100 ways and it's $1 a slice.
Okay.
Does that mean that the one that's $10 is better than the one that's $1? No. It just means that there's 10 times the amount.
Yeah, like, so it just more means you have more.
You have more, yeah. So, and that's the way it works with a lot of these ETFs. The thing is, some of the ETFs started a very long time ago. Okay. And so what's happened is, as they've gone up in price, the price has kept on going up. So some of the newer ETFs have a smaller price on them, but they really represent the same thing, and they just have a bigger slice of it.
Okay.
And that's really the only difference.
Yep.
The thing, as we were talking about, is that sometimes if you only have $500 to invest, there's one ETF, the IVV ETF, which is an ETF that invests in the United States.
Okay.
It's a really popular ETF, one of the most popular. Mm-hmm. I think that's about $500 for one.
Oh, wow.
Right? So if you were going to invest in that one, you could choose one of those or find one that's about $25 or $50,
yeah,
in which you get 10 pieces. It really doesn't matter at the end, okay, of the day. You can just go with whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we actually, happens at the time of this recording, we actually recommend the IVV ETF, the one that's $500. You know, if you had $500, you probably wouldn't want to choose that one because you'd only get one. They, yeah, wouldn't give you half of or a quarter of one.
Yeah.
So you want to choose one that's smaller. And in that case, you would get a full amount.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Is there like any better way to go? Like, I know you said you get more. Like, if you get more, is that better?
Well, it all just depends on how much you actually want to invest.
Okay.
So if you, it doesn't matter if like, if you have, like if we go back to the pizza analogy, one of the pizzas was $10 a slice, another one was $1.
Mm-hmm.
You might have one and I might have 10.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually make a difference because they both cost $10 at the end of the day. Like our investment in the pizza was both $10.
Right.
So it wouldn't matter if you had one of those and I had 10 of these, or you had 10 of those and I had one of these.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter.
Okay. So it's just the same.
Yeah. And this is the same thing with shares. Like people are like, well, Commonwealth Bank is this high and National Australia Bank is only half of that. Shouldn't I just, is it Commonwealth Bank better?
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. What actually matters is how fast things go up.
Okay.
So if you think about your investment in the pizza might go up 10%.
Right.
Now, 10% on $10 takes it to $11.
Yeah.
10% of $1 takes it to $1.10. It's still 10%. Doesn't, yep, matter which one you're focusing on. We want the growth.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter how many actual units you have.
Okay.
Yeah, there are some tiny little devil in the details here, but for the most part, for this series, we don't need to worry about that. Yeah. We can just focus on just invest.
Yep.
Yeah. And find the one that you can buy round numbers of, like that would be good. Like I just looked at another ETF here, which is the VGS ETF. It's the International Shares ETF from Vanguard. It's $94. So if you invested $500, you'd get around five of these.
Cool.
Whereas you'd only get one and a bit of the other one. You can't really get a bit. So yeah, you're probably better off with this one.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. They're slightly different, but it just gives you an example.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's about it for.
Yeah. I think they're the main points that we wanted to cover.
Yeah. Do you have any questions?
You explained everything really well. As I was thinking of questions, you were answering them.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Cool. So, okay. So the next episode will be interesting. You can actually send us your questions as well. You can use the link in the show notes. We will do a bit of a ETF Q&A towards the end. If Monique didn't ask you any questions that you really wanted answered, if you have listened to this as your first episode, please go back to number one. That will answer some questions. And we'll continue on from here.
We've got a free Google Doc to go along with this series, which is in the show notes. So make sure you grab a hold of that, and that will give you a good tool to use for tomorrow's episode when we get into researching ETFs, specifically ASX 200 ETFs.
Yeah, and it will show you how to like do a checklist for investing. So yes, go and check that out. Kate, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Mini Pizza / Monique, thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
Great. See you in the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast, where our mission is to improve the financial futures of all Australians. If you'd like to learn more, create a free account at rusk.com.au/account to download free episode workbooks, bonus resources, and take our amazing free personal finance courses.
You can also join our online community by following the link in the description. If you enjoyed the show, what we'd love is for you to leave us a snappy review on iTunes. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Rask Australia. Kate and I are also on both of those channels. Finally, if you have any feedback, suggestions for episodes or guests to come on the show, or you just have a question for us, shoot us an email at podcast@rask.com.au.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10. And to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high-growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high-growth strategy focuses on longer-term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out.
Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of Rask Corps, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax? I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nivexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All Rask users get 20% off an annual plan with Nivexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nivexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nivexa, but they do create some great tools which the Rask community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the Rask YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the Rask network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000, and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.